corazón se queda aquí. Queda aquí. Esta es mi historia.
Welcome to the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast. This podcast is hosted by the Emergent Historians. We are part of the Dallas Mexican American Historical League, also known as DEMAL for short. DEMAL, funded in 2008, is a nonprofit focused on researching, collecting, documenting, and preserving Mexican American history in Dallas, Texas. On this season, we will share the lived experiences of BIPOC, meaning Black, Indigenous, and People of Color business owners who have been affected by COVID-19 in Dallas, and we will also hear how they are navigating these times. Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoy. Please like, subscribe, and share. My name is Jennifer Angel, and today we have Dra. Alexi Maleski.
All right, Lexi, thank you so much for joining us on the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast. My name is Victoria, and this is my co-host, Jennifer.
Again, thank you so much, Lexi, for being here. We're very excited to hear from you and really learn about what you do. To kick things off, do you mind sharing a bit about yourself, including how you identify as it relates to race and or ethnicity?
Yes, thank you, Victoria and Jennifer, for having me tonight. So I am originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Born and raised, went to college up there, did everything up there. My mom is actually from Mexico. She's from Puerto Vallarta. She was born in Zapopan and then traveled from Puerto Vallarta to Guadalajara and back and forth. And she actually met my dad when she was 15 when they moved to San Diego. So she actually came across not legally and when she was 11 years old. And so she is a legal resident via marriage. And both her and my dad live in Wisconsin. I'm the oldest of four. And I do identify as Mexican and Polish. I always just say I'm Mexican and Polish. That's it. My dad is Polish. And then he's got a little bit of French and Irish in there or whatever, but it's easiest to just to say Polish. And then my mom being from Mexico, I identify, I think, more greatly on her side. My white side is a little bit colder and just a little bit, it's just not the same. And so that's, especially moving to Texas and Dallas specifically, I feel like that Mexican side kind of comes in a little bit more handy.
Yeah, for sure. I'm multiracial. That's how I identify. And so my dad's side of the family is white. And so I definitely feel you on that. And culturally, I do identify more with my mom's side of the family, Mexican-American, Tejanos. And so yes. Mm-hmm. I love that. I love hearing that. So can you share about the mission of your business with us, Lexi?
Yes. So our mission is to provide access to holistic healthcare services to create change within our community through education, health, and empowerment. And so through that, our goal was to create with access affordability in our services and multiple services that are thought of as luxury and actually create something that can be budgetable within somebody's budget, specifically working in single income families.
That's amazing, Lexi. And what inspired you to start your own business?
So basically, when I moved down here, I knew I wasn't gonna go back to Wisconsin. So I was like, the world is my oyster, I'm gonna go somewhere. But I also have never liked being told what to do or not being my own boss. And so I knew I was going to start my own practice. I just didn't know what it looked like or how it was gonna happen. And so moving forward into chiropractic school and into clinic, I realized, whoa, I really need to provide services for someone like my family. Being blue collar, my mom worked for the post office. My dad worked for the post office. He was double full time, so he worked for the post office and was a firefighter, or is a firefighter, and a veteran. So he was in the military as well. And I was like, okay, I want to provide services for people like that. How do I do that? And so they are basically the inspiration to my fee schedule, who I serve, how I serve, and all of that. And so moving forward into my own business like that, basically we're the only ones in DFW that function and work the way that we do.
That's awesome. I'd really like to take this time to give major props to our birthing community that has now changed, but like that name changed. But whenever I first connected mm-hmm. with Lexi, I was just a few weeks away from my pregnancy, and I started getting adjusted because I was having some major SPD pain. And so for people who might not know what that means, getting in and out of my car, like opening and closing my legs, was just really painful. It hurt so much. And so, and also just like the amount of changes in total pregnancy does to your body, you're achy already. And so I was so comforted to find some kind of relief in the end stages of my pregnancy. And I went to mommy yoga, and I was stretching like I hadn't been before. And I really do believe that that had a major, major role in how amazingly well my birth went. It was like the beginning stages of it were long, but whenever I was in like the active birthing, it was very, very short, 45 minutes. And I think it's because of the work that Lexi did with me. And so thank you, Lexi. And also,
yes, Victoria, of course.
Yes. On top of that, my family and I used to go to Lexi, and she was so, so sweet. And I would bring like my mom and my dad, and the rates were very affordable. And so she's about the mission. So it's not just like you speak to it, but you're about it as well, right? Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I just had to get that in there. I made a note to make sure to give you your due.
Thank you. Thank you. And the thing is that we would rather you be under care than not, because the goal ultimately is to flip the script of crisis care. People only will spend money if they're in crisis, or if they're in pain, or if they can't work, or if they can't show up to school, or whatever it may be, right? And so my goal is to create something that's affordable that you can continuously receive, so that ultimately we decrease that amount of crisis. And if we are in crisis, we can get out of it faster, and it's not going to break the bank either. Yeah. And again, like I said, I'd rather you be under care than not. So even if you can't pay per visit, or we have the monthly memberships or whatever, if something's not feasible, it's always a conversation here, to be able to serve you in however that looks.
Yeah. Yeah. That preventative care is so important. But, I guess it segues into asking, how has your business grown or changed in the last years? And that name change I was referencing, I know, is part of that.
Yeah. So first we created a nonprofit, a 501c3, which is our birthing home wellness community. And then last December, I split off and created our wellness community, which is the LLC and the for-profit side. And we're actually transitioning. So I've always functioned like a nonprofit, right? I've just taken donations. I've taken what you can afford. I've taken donations from the community to furnish our home. I've done it all. And so I figured, okay, let's go ahead and make this legal, like tax legal, but also allow us to receive grants and to receive help from these foundations, so that we can ultimately give more scholarships and give more free care to the people that truly need it, but also to those that want it. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, especially with COVID happening, people are suffering in different ways, and financially specifically, right? And so if we can help people function and have a better quality of life, then let's go ahead and do that. And so the transition of the practice has grown in that we are providing more services, and we're providing more and bringing on more people onto the team that want to serve in this capacity, to serve people that are that need these services, but they're not part of that 10%. They're part of the 90%, right? And so I think that's how it's transitioned. Obviously, it's transitioned legally, entity-wise, name-wise, I should say, LLC versus the nonprofit, the 501c3. So there's been separation in that. And then we've expanded. So we're in 3,200 square feet as of last week, from my house. So I've shared my home for 5 years now, practicing and serving, or practicing and living in the same space. And it has been time. I want to have a boyfriend. I want to have a family. You know, I want to do the things that I get to watch all my families do every day. So this transition has been probably the biggest one. And the fact that it's happening during COVID has been life-changing. There's been delays because of it, but we're still rocking and rolling.
That's a huge accomplishment, Lexi, especially during COVID that really has changed a whole 180 in people's careers and businesses. And along those lines of COVID that you mentioned, what are some other challenges that perhaps you've had to face because of COVID?
So in the beginning, it was kind of scary because this is my livelihood, right? And so until we found out that chiropractors were deemed essential in Dallas County, it was kind of unknown, like, do we keep practicing? Do we not? What do we do? And so thankfully, chiropractors were deemed essential, and so I could continue serving my people. And ultimately, what it came down to is health is essential. And health just means our ability to adapt. So if I'm serving people that are increasing their abilities to adapt, ultimately, we've had zero cases of COVID come out of this house, or now this new space, but out of this house. And so COVID did decrease. I'm trying to think. I think financially in March, I dropped down about 35%. But back in April, we were back up 100%. So the amount of visits decreased somewhat, rightfully so, because we take care of a lot of newborn babies, a lot of pregnant women, people that wanted to limit their exposure, which is understandable. But it also changed, I think, the dynamic of the practice as well, and brought in a lot more different people that are open to these kind of holistic services and allowing their immune systems to be boosted in different ways, in natural ways.
Yeah, that's a lot of things, a lot of hurdles to overcome. What are some of the practices that you've had to implement to keep your patrons safe whenever they do visit you?
Mm-hmm. So for us, because my special focus is pregnancy, the majority of my pregnant women don't necessarily have to be masked. And so if you choose to be masked, you are allowed to be masked. And basically you wear a mask for me. So since my job is super physical, I will mask if I'm asked, but for the majority of the time, people are okay with unmasked. And if they want to be masked, they're masked themselves. But we've increased our cleaning, our wiping down the table, our washing of hands, and all of those things. And like I said, we've had zero cases, but again, this isn't Walmart, or this isn't, you know what I mean? Like, these people are coming in already health conscious and already doing the things to support their bodies. And so for us, it's a lot. And everybody was coming into my home, you know what I mean? So for me, I was like, you're like my family. And that's how I kind of treated it, because I think a lot of it comes down to fear as well, and that decreases the immune system. And so I think being fearful of something that our bodies are capable of addressing and fighting is something that I've wanted to really instill in everybody. And so I think that trust from these families and everything like that during this time has really increased our practice base, has increased just our ability to expand.
Yeah, hearing you talk about how fear can decrease what your immune system is able to fight off really reminds me of like the very beginning of the pandemic, whenever we just realized what was happening, you know? And my dad has cancer, and so I was very, wanting to just protect my dad. And I was talking to a friend, and I was just like, Autumn, did you know that if you get too like into the fear base of it, then you can make yourself sick, more susceptible to getting sick? And I was just like, you're damned either way. So you might as well just.
Yes.
Just try your hardest to, be healthy and, you know, take your vitamins, do that kind of stuff. But
and that's the thing. It's a real virus, right? It's a real thing. But how do I serve hundreds of people every single week and I've never gotten the flu, or I've never gotten sick, or we haven't had any COVID issues, or this and that, right? And so what it comes down to is, how are you being responsible for your health and your body, right? And your family. And if you're doing the things necessary, then you will, if you get it, you will overcome it. Doesn't mean that, you know, people haven't died, doesn't mean this or that, right? There are comorbidities. And yes, we want to protect the people that are the most fragile, right? But people have allowed me in their homes during this time to take care of their newborn babies. And again, I'm in contact with hundreds of people per week, but it's about that trust and that understanding and that knowing that your bodies are capable of fighting it if necessary.
Something also that resonates so much with me, and it's inspiring just to hear you as well, is your deep connection with people in the community, your connection of a family you've even shared. They are in your space because, like you said, your business was your home, you know, mm-hmm. and you've gone to other, especially during COVID, when personal space feels to be so precious because mm-hmm. you just don't know the collateral effects. So it's just amazing. And, you know, now that you've expanded to a new location, do you still live in the neighborhood? You know, what's your vision for that neighborhood?
Yes. So I always say I live in the Mexican part of Oak Cliff because I'm just a little bit south. I'm not in the new buildings or the million-dollar homes or anything like that. And Victoria, you've been there. It's that one way. It's safe. It's, you know, it's just nestled in that neighborhood right across from Mutual Economy Market. And so we literally, our new space is 1 minute drive or a 5 minute walk from that house. So we did not go far. But what's so interesting, now Oak Cliff, especially North Oak Cliff, is so fascinating to me, is literally you walk one block and it's a completely different demographic and a completely different scene, right? So my hopes for our community, and what's so fascinating is my neighbor Hector, I don't know if you've ever seen him out there, Victoria, just tinkering around at his house, but he has never come and seen me at my house for 5 years, but he literally showed up last week for care at this new space. And it's like stuff like that where it's like, wow, like you could have received care next door this entire time, but you're literally coming to our new space. And it's just like really cool. It's just like that. It's again, I want to gain trust. I want to grow confidence. I want people to know that somebody really truly cares for them. And I've seen a lot of people on our block, you know, down the street. I've seen our neighbors. I've seen, you know, people have come into the house wondering. A lot of people think it's a daycare because there's so many kids that come in and out. I'm like, no, we're not a daycare. I promise, do not drop any kids off. But I think my hopes in like being in this community, they have not changed. My goal was to always marry Old Oak Cliff with New Oak Cliff. And New Oak Cliff looks like that white influx that's coming in, right? And Old Oak Cliff, but provide a space that's safe for everyone that feels welcome, no matter who you are, no matter what you do for your living, you know, whatever it may be. I have one of my mixed mamas that comes in that works at Pizza Hut down the street. And then I have one of my stay-at-home mamas in Kessler Park that comes in from her million-dollar home with her nanny and doesn't have to worry about her kids and whatnot. And they can sit together on the couch and they can have a conversation with one another. And so that is my goal for this community, is to be able to mix that and to marry that. And for people to understand that we don't have to, you know, be on the separate playing field, right? And a lot of times it comes down to a language barrier or things like that, right? But at the end of the day, like, we chose this neighborhood for a reason. And so let's act like it, right?
Definitely. I was thinking back to whenever I had last been to your space and having Emily adjusted. She was just like a couple months old. And gosh, I think she was having some tummy issues at the time. And that was a big help. And it's just crazy the things that I'm learning about as a parent that, you know, weren't accessible for my mom or weren't even on her radar, you know, to be able mm-hmm. to consider. So thinking about the vision that you've just shared with us, Lexi, is just really amazing. Also, because I am someone who has lived in Oak Cliff for most of my life, and, you know, like with the gentrification that is happening, it can be scary sometimes to think about businesses that are displacing us. And so I've never felt that way whenever I entered the space that you created. I always felt super safe. And the mixture, and it's crazy because sometimes I don't necessarily feel safe around certain people. But I never felt that way in your space. Even though there wasn't a significant mix of, you know, like it wasn't just like I was around just brown people, you know, so that was something that I really appreciated and I was aware of because it doesn't happen too often, you know?
Right. Right. Especially with, again, the new influx in Oak Cliff, right? Especially North Oak Cliff. So that is something really important to me, is just a safe and secure place for all people, no matter, again, who you are, what you do, what you believe in. For the longest, a lot of people thought I was Buddhist because I had a lot of Buddhist, like Buddha pictures in my house. And then, you know, as the years gone on, I probably switch out the house like every season, like would switch it up and change it up. And I got rid of them. And one of my moms, she's maybe non-denominational Christian or something. I'm Catholic, by the way, but she was like, when she found out that I wasn't Buddhist, she was like, oh, praise Jesus. And I'm like, I love that you didn't even know what I was, you know, at the end of the day, like that's exactly what we want to be here, is just very fluid and accepting of everything and everyone. And becoming a resource. Like you said, just having not, our parents didn't have access to these information or these resources or anything like that. So that's my ultimate goal. At the very end of the day, can I be a resource for you? If I can't help you personally, can I at least send you somewhere, or can I at least get you something that will help you?
What's something you've enjoyed during this whole process of changing people's lives?
Oh man, there are so many. I think my most favorite, and this isn't going to be specific because it's regarding all of my toddlers. So any baby that has been adjusted since birth or in utero, basically, and through birth and then through toddler stages, is when they come in and they run and they give me a hug and then they jump on the table. That's probably my most favorite thing, because it's like these babies are born knowing what chiropractic is and what it can do for their lives. That's probably my absolute favorite. And then I'm like, this is why we do what we do.
I've seen that, and it's so cute. She used to have like this little cardboard house for the kids mm-hmm. to play with and stuff, and they just like loved it. Earlier you mentioned that you are also working as a nonprofit. Was that a hard process to walk through, being also a business and a health professional?
Yeah, that was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done, because I didn't know what I was doing. I hired a lawyer who didn't seem to know what he was doing either, which was really interesting because it was a nonprofit focused practice. But what ended up happening is I didn't know that I actually gained nonprofit status until May 2019, and we had gained it November 2018. And so I had no idea in this whole time. Like, I didn't hear from the IRS, I didn't hear from the lawyer, I don't know. I only found out because one of my mamas, who is a VP at a big advertising firm, wanted to put our names in for a grant. And I was like, sure, you can go ahead, but we're not a nonprofit, so whatever. And then sure enough, I come up in the database and I was like, whoa. I was like, okay. So then I searched the IRS and I was like, okay, there we go. But it was a hard process because I had no idea what I was doing. Everybody kept asking me, Lexi, are you sure you want to do this? Because this is going to be really expensive filing taxes. And one of the perks of being a nonprofit is if I'm an employee, after 10 years, I can get my student loans forgiven. But that started in 2007, 2017, when that first 10-year mark showed up. Basically, the U.S. Bar Association is suing the U.S. Department of Education, because the U.S. Department of Education was like, what program? And so all of these people that chose nonprofit jobs and these low-paying jobs to get their loans forgiven in 10 years are, you know, up in arms. So the Bar Association apparently is countersuing, you know, all of these things. And so everybody was like, Lexi, even if you don't get this, would you still do this? And I was like, yes, because I am functioning like a nonprofit and I want to be able to gain community support. And so unfortunately, everything was kind of on the back burner for that, because that's a lot of accounting and all the things that I did not have the manpower for, because I'm in full-time practice and business. And it's so weird because I'm a doctor, but I'm in business for myself. So it's like I have, you know, practice members and dealing with those issues and being a resource for them and remedies and all of that, and being a birth doula as well. So I'm like that, but then I have to run a business, which I do poorly at usually. I'm 2 months behind in my invoicing right now. So I have to get paid in some way, you know, and then throw a nonprofit in there and all of that comes with it. It's kind of been on the back burner. We have its own account. It has a little bit of money in there. But moving forward now in this new space, we're going to have, I think, a bigger opportunity to increase that scholarship fund in the bucket for what we can do with the nonprofit and how we can pour out more. But the ultimate goal of the nonprofit was to provide more services. That grant that I was talking about, we ended up winning it, which was awesome. It was like $2,200, and we were able to give one of our single moms a full at-home birth, basically. So she got her midwifery care taken care of. with that grant. And so we were able to have another beautiful little baby born at home.
Sounds as if you have to wear multiple hats and like, okay, right now I'm doing this, I'm doing that, right? It's just a lot of balancing. What piece of advice would you share to someone, and maybe yourself, right? When you were just starting off with your business as an entrepreneur, yeah, what's a piece of advice?
The one thing I keep saying is either having an angel investor, an investor, or a partner. Starting it alone was really hard. And now moving forward, but at the end of the day, there's nobody that's going to love it as much as you do because it's your baby, right? Unless you do start it together. But I've heard so many partnerships gone sour, right? So that's always been a big fear of mine as well. But maybe it would have been like an investor, because financially had that backing, had it been there, I might have been able to do a lot more of this stuff quicker. But at the end of the day, it's my journey, right? So I think it could go both ways, but I would say you have to really love it, and you have to know that nobody's going to care as much as you do. And that's how you get through it. You just got to be like, all right, this is on me and this is how we're doing it. So you have to also be willing to be poor financially for a little bit, as long as your spirit is full. Does that make sense? That's the biggest thing. If it fills your spirit, just know that that money will come, because money is a byproduct of your service.
Yeah. I love hearing that. Man, if you're doing work that is just like your passion end all be all, then it makes it worthwhile, even whenever the money might not be there. And mm-hmm. I'm glad.
And you'll be provided in other ways. You know what I mean? If you're literally doing God's purpose for your purpose in life, then ultimately you will be provided for, and it may look different than financial. But just as long as you're spiritually full, keep moving.
This is a little backtracking, but the question came up in my head whenever I heard you talk about how the chiropractic offices hadn't been open because they weren't deemed essential at first. Was that something that you personally had a part in advocating for? Is there an organization that advocates on your behalf in order to open up? How did that work?
I honestly have no idea. I was like, this is a godsend. Whoever is on like the governor's board, whatever, somebody's got to receive chiropractic, and they knew that it was an essential thing. So the reason we were deemed essential was basically to take the load off of urgent care and ER visits regarding pain. And so that's why chiropractors were having the ability to be open and to practice and to serve their communities, because ultimately we are literally unloading or taking that load off of the urgent care and ER when they were being inundated with those original COVID cases. So I don't know if it was the ICA, the International Chiropractic Association. I don't know if there was anybody specific or any foundation specific to chiropractic that was advocating for us. But I was like, Dallas County's got to have somebody that gets chiropractic care. They just had to know, you know what I mean? They just had to know, because massage therapy wasn't essential. You know what I mean? So it came down to, I don't even know. And I don't think all across the US, I don't think that it was deemed essential like it was in Dallas County. So there had to have been some kind of advocating or something, you know what I mean? But yeah, I had no say in that. I was just waiting for the letter.
You put action to your mission, and it's changing lives every day. And so I'm just excited to see where your business will continue to go. Again, both Victoria and I are so thankful of your time. Do you mind, for those listening today, sharing where people could connect with you online?
Yes. So on Instagram, we have our wellness community, Dallas. And then my personal is Dr. Alexi Molesky. That is a public account too. So people can, you know, follow or not, whatever you want to do. Website is ourwellnesscommunity.com or owcdallas.com, I think. Yeah, owcdallas.com. And that's probably where you can get the most information, is that website or Instagram.
Wonderful. We thank you so much for being a guest on our podcast, Lexi, and we wish you your ventures with this business. Major blessings to you. Thank you.
Thank you, both of you. Thank you for having me. I feel very honored to be part of this. So, yeah. Thank you.
This episode was hosted by Victoria Ferrell Ortiz and Jennifer Rangel. Original music by Veronica Valera, co-composer and vocals, Andrew Jackson, trumpet and sound editor,
Autumn Graves, composer, guitar, lead vocals. If you like the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, Delotero, everybody. Only you can prevent your history from being forgotten. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at DMAHL Official and like us on Facebook. Leave a review and stay safe out there. Hasta pronto. Pueden intentar robar mi casa, mi cultura y la bajada, pero mi alma.